Welcome back to Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Thousands of young people in the U.S. and hundreds in Maryland each year are sucked into human trafficking, being forced or coerced into labor or sexual slavery. A fortunate few get free of their captors and a chance to put their lives back together in a safe place. On 23 Woodsy Acres in South Baltimore, a nonprofit called The Samaritan Women runs the only long-term restoration program in the Mid-Atlantic for adult women who have been trafficked. In its 19th-century mansion with windows embellished by stained glass and a posse of purring black house cats, I met Catherine. She was in her early 20s when a trafficker lured her into his sex business in a western U.S. city.
At first, he treated me like I was his girlfriend and he was my boyfriend for a long time. You know, he just romanced me and took me out to dinner and we had a lot of fun. And then after a while, the tables turned and, you know, he was just very abusive and aggressive towards me.
And you were like college age. Did you get to do anything that a college woman would be able to do?
No, I wasn't allowed to read. I even tried going to the library once, and when he found out that I went to the library and took out books, he beat me up because he said I wasn't worth anything but the money that I was making.
And how long did this last?
About 4 years. Four brutal years is how long I was out there and being human trafficked.
You say brutal. Tell us what that means.
Brutal just means it's a nightmare that I can't even describe that I wouldn't wish upon anybody. Just not being able to eat and not being able to sleep for more than 2 hours and just having, you know, being sold for sex and having different men rape you and use your body over and over again. It's just, you know, it's an experience sometimes you can't even put into words.
How did it end?
Well, I had some very nice detectives that my family considers angels in uniform who recognized me as a victim, and they got in touch with the Samaritan Women, and then I was able to come to a program.
Now, you were not in Maryland, right? The detectives were from out of state?
Correct. I was in a different state.
And so you got here, and then what? How did you try to put your life back together?
It was a long process. It took a while. You know, I had to rediscover myself again when I was out there for the 4 years and I was told I could only eat once a day and I didn't have a choice. You know, even trying to decide what to eat for lunch was a huge decision. So it was a slow recovery process. And then it was also fun because I got to explore myself and try to figure out what I really like to do.
As some part of that, you decided you wanted to go to college.
Yes, I realized that I did want to be somebody and, you know, that I was smart enough. So I started on my free time reading, and I would read 3 or 4 books at a time because I just enjoyed reading so much. And then, you know, I decided maybe it's time to try some college courses and see, you know, if I was capable.
So what did you try first?
Well, I really found a human services certificate program that was really interesting, and, you know, I'd be able to work with at-risk youth and children who have similar experiences to me or just, you know, having a rough life. So I tried a human services introductory course and the 1-credit how to be a successful freshman course.
Catherine said she loved the studies, but the urban neighborhood around Baltimore City Community College traumatized her. It reminded her of the locality where she had been trafficked, and she feared her trafficker's contacts in Baltimore were looking for her. She learned that the Community College of Baltimore County had a campus just 10 minutes from the Samaritan Women. But since she doesn't live in the county, tuition would cost nearly twice what a county resident pays. Catherine testified for legislation approved this week by the state Senate to allow community colleges to waive the out-of-county fee for victims of trafficking. It seems like a small thing, but Catherine said it's huge.
I do. I think if legislation comes together and agrees with the community colleges that we should waive out-of-county tuition fees for victims like myself of human trafficking because there's already so much stress and trauma occurred, and just filling out an application, a college application alone is stressful, let alone to get out-of-county tuition. You know, victims like myself are so used to being told we're only worth a money amount, a certain value amount, or we're only worth as much money as we make. So to send that message again when trying to create a new life and be a healthy, successful community member is something that I would frown upon.
That's Catherine, a recovering victim of human trafficking. This is Maryland Morning on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Jean Allard, who founded the Samaritan Women 8 years ago, agreed that in-county tuition can make a big difference to the women she serves.
We know that education is the way out of exploitation and re-victimization. We've certainly learned that across the globe, and we need to apply that domestically as well. And so as we have been working with restoring victims of domestic human trafficking, we have found a huge deficit in their academic preparation. Most of the gals we see around eighth grade is what we get. And so she may be in her 20s, but that's when her education stopped. And so it's very important to us that we have a safe and compassionate way of her getting back into academic development. So we do a lot of work with tutors and GED, and the community college is a perfect forum for them to be able to have milestones of achievement. In the community college setting, they can have certificates, which is less of an investment than an AA degree and less of an investment than a bachelor's degree. But as she gains more confidence and more academic credential, she's more inclined to move on with her education. Plus, the environment is very, very conducive to our population because the students tend to be more adult students, can be a very diverse environment, non-traditional student. So it's good all the way around.
Someone at the Senate hearing, the committee hearing, raised the question of whether this doesn't require young women who've been trafficked to sort of out themselves to the community college, to their new setting, as having been victims of a serious crime. Is that a problem?
Well, fortunately, one of the amendments is to make sure that the address and identifying information can be remained confidential, but that in aggregate, the number of individuals who've taken advantage of this waiver could be reported, so we would know the numbers, but not necessarily the persons.
We are sitting in this impressive facility that you have organized, the Samaritan Women have organized, that is one of the few residential long-term restoration projects for women who have been trafficked, one of the few in the country, I understand. When women get to you, what do they need?
Well, it's too simple to say everything, but it's accurate. It is a fair characterization that we usually get a gal who may or may not have identification, likely has some threat condition over her. She's escaping a situation. She's been rescued from a situation. So there's a tremendous amount of trauma, anxiety, fear. We oftentimes see gals who 96% of our population were molested as children. So we're talking about systemic, long-term, complex trauma. On average, we're going to see a gal between the ages of 21 to 26, and she has been in the life 4 to 8 years. And so her period of trauma has been sustained. We very seldom see individuals who fit the sort of Hollywood profile of somebody who's been plucked out of obscurity and then all of a sudden they were in this criminal environment. More often, what we see is that it's been a long road of successive vulnerabilities and rendering her more and more easy prey to a trafficker. So the childhood sexual assault, maybe promiscuity in school, maybe access to substance abuse, violence in the home, absent parents, substance abuse in the home, those kinds of conditions, prolonged exposure in the foster care system, being moved around a lot, are the things that render a woman very vulnerable to the lies that a trafficker is offering.
How long do your young women tend to stay with you?
They can stay up to 2 years. We see that the highest attrition rate is within the first 3 months. And oftentimes because she's really deciding whether or not she's ready to make a commitment to herself. You know, it's very frightening to say, I want to completely reinvent my life. I want to take everything that I've known and turn it upside down and be something I've never been and something that people have told me I never could be. And so that's a pretty hard proposition to put on somebody who's 22 or 24 years old. And so we see a lot, like we do in the domestic violence community, we see a lot of victims go back to their perpetrators. And so that's tragic to watch, but we also have to understand it's also part of the pathology of the crime. There's a lot of trauma bonding. And so she may come back to us a year later. She may come back, or she may show up at another agency, we hope. Unfortunately, statistically, the likelihood that she's going to end up dead is the highest proposition.
Catherine told us that there were detectives whom her family considers angels who saw her as a victim and got her out of the situation she was in. Is law enforcement changing the way it deals with women who have been trafficked?
In many parts of the country, that is happening. The whole notion of being victim-centered and trauma-informed really comes out of the law enforcement industry, where we have found that women in this situation can be re-victimized by law enforcement, the way they're interrogated, the way they're treated, the way they are handled within the, like in central booking, for example. We have a survivor who will tell you that there would be catcalls and all kinds of profanity that would be yelled out to the women who would be rounded up at night, from the clubs. And so that's a very demoralizing experience as well. In her particular case, their lieutenant was very proactive in educating the detectives about where these survivors have come from, what their situation really is, and what the whole trauma is associated with trafficking, the forms of coercion and control. So that's helped to make them much more sympathetic to these women's situation. We're hopeful that more jurisdictions here in Maryland will take a proactive stance on education. We have some counties where the leadership within those police departments have said this is important, and we're going to go ahead and incur the time and cost to make sure that officers are trained in that issue, but it's not yet across the whole state.
How would you assess how aware people in Maryland are of the problem of trafficking? What should they know that they don't?
I think the biggest hurdle we have to overcome here in Maryland is that it's local. I think that we have a fairly decent awareness as American citizens that human trafficking exists. There still is a bit of a chasm between thinking of this as a global problem, not a domestic problem, but certainly as a localized problem. I think that that's a very challenging statement for most Marylanders. When we get down to the community level, where if I'm in Bel Air or Davidsonville or Sykesville, it's a very hard pill to swallow that this is something that is happening right here in your neighborhood. I think most people don't understand that this is a crime that's not only extremely mobile, but it comes to you. You don't have to go to the venue. It can come to your door. You literally can order this type of service, over your phone, over the internet. And so that changes the dynamic of geography. It basically can be anywhere.
I really appreciate your talking to us about it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Jean Allert founded and runs a nonprofit called The Samaritan Women, which runs the only long-term restoration program in the Mid-Atlantic for adult female victims of human trafficking. By the way, Catherine made the dean's list at CCBC and is to be inducted in the Phi Theta Kappa International Honor Society. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, including Allert's explanation of the biblical story from which the group took its name. I'm Sheila Cast, ahead on Maryland Morning, a blast, the Baltimore Blast. Stay with us on 88.1.